This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's time for the Score Evening Show, weeknights 6 till 9 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Here's your host, Mark Grody.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Good to see you all. I am here with you until 9 o'clock tonight on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are open. 312-644-6767 is the number to call or to text if you would like. We got a lot happening tonight. Here's who we have on the show. We will at 6:25 be talking to Evan Altman about the Chicago Cubs. He is the editor-in-chief and co-founder of CubsInsider.com. Evan will join us in about 25 minutes to talk about the Cubs, who lost again today. Two straight losses for the Cubs. They go down against the Giants today. 3-1 the final. We will take a close-up on the Cubs here in about 20 minutes or so. Also, at 7 p.m., we're going to talk to Carmen Vitale. She is the NFC North reporter for Fox Sports. Always love talking to Carmi V. Again, she will join us at 7 o'clock to talk about the Bears, to talk about the division, to talk about the NFL. There was a trade today. We'll ask her about George Pickens, who now finds himself in a Dallas Cowboys uniform. And John Greenberg of The Athletic will join us at 8 o'clock. He wrote a very cool article about a man named Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA Pete. He has all sorts of ways that you can reference him. I am not tired of the PCA articles, close-ups, interviews, and learning about PCA, and I learned a couple of new things reading John's article today. So we will talk to him about the Cubs. We'd like to spray to all fields with Greenberg, too. So we'll talk to him about the Cubs, the White Sox, the Bears. I don't know about the Bulls and Blackhawks. I think it's all been said for now.
Pass.
Yeah, exactly. So we are officially not going to talk with John about the Bulls or Blackhawks unless he's got some sort of revelation.
Who does he want the Blackhawks to take at number 3 in the draft?
I think he'd be pissed off if I asked him that question because he'd have no idea.
Well, he could just say a name and we could be, that guy.
You're absolutely right. I do want to ask this question because this is the question that I've been asking myself today. I've been asking it for a while. Let me just ask the question first, and then I will go into it a little bit more deeply here. Are we, as a Bears base, and when I say a Bears base, I mean you, the Bears fan, me, the Bears reporter and or talk show host, you, the Bears meatball, the observer, the casual fan of the Bears, are we again in the month of May for a Bears season? Are we out of control with our expectations for this team?
No.
There's a long stream. That's studs. There's been a long thread of breadcrumbs that have gotten me to this point. And I actually believe it started with my good friend and partner, and Studs is good friend too. I mean, the only reason Studs is the trash panda is because of our good friend Steve Rosenblum, who is the famous Saturday host of the Wake and Bake show, which he performs semi-regularly from 11 a.m. until like 2 o'clock, give or take. But he asked me the question over the weekend, this last weekend. He said, Grody, if the Bears go 9-8 but don't make the playoffs, is that okay with you? My immediate answer is yes. Yes, that is absolutely okay, because the Bears have been historically and hysterically awful over the last three seasons, at least two out of the last three seasons. They've had 10-game losing streaks in two of the last three seasons. Last year was a nightmare, one of the worst seasons in Bears history. So, yeah, I take 9-8 out of the Bears and not playoffs. Rosenblum saw it differently. He said, absolutely not. Can't have that. No way. But, of course, I mean, you go back 10 years, and I'm not going to do that exercise again, but if you go back 10 years, you are not going to find a whole lot of winning seasons for the Chicago Bears. 2018, and that might be just about it off the top of my head. So, yeah, 9-8 is good for me. Another thing, just we're leading up to something here. BetMGM on April 24th had the Bears, the over-under number, at 8.5. 8.5 wins is where it is. And every time that we've had Joe Ostrowski on, when I'm hosting on various shows, he has said it's happening again. And he says it sort of and dreadfully. It's happening again. Bears fans are pounding the over on the Chicago Bears. Optimism. It's what Bears fans do. And to some degree, I get it. I like it. I understand it. I was complicit in this last year. So everybody's pounding the over. And then, and this is slightly different, but I think it leads into the overall point here about us maybe being out of control in May again. Jalen Johnson today was on a podcast, and he was maybe just symbolically of what we're talking about, going a little bit overboard with his individual goals.
Expectations. It's crazy. I just wrote my numbers down too. I want to have 7 interceptions. I want to have 3 forced fumbles. I mean, 10 turnovers. Okay. At least. I want to have no touchdowns given up, no games over 50 yards.
A solid lockdown defense right there.
Yeah, no doubt. First team all pro bowl again. That's a given. But I mean, just as far as numbers go, I want to get in the end zone 3 times for sure. I got to get that too.
Ooh. Wait, hold on, man. Hold on.
I'll have him.
Did I hear you say 7 INTs? You got what? So in the off season, did you get hand surgery or something?
Yeah, and jug machine, all that. Don't even worry about it.
Cause I know you can't catch, so I don't know how you gonna get 7.
What's going on here?
I like that. I like that. Now I'm gonna get 7, and when I get 7, you gotta give me something.
If you get 7, I'm gonna get you what you want. Yeah, I got you. You already know.
Get him that rolling. Get him one of these bust downs.
And if you don't get 7,
I'll let me.
Yeah, I flip. Yeah, you know how we do.
Hey man, just throw Keith a couple bottles of tequila.
Catch.
He said, damn, come on, we got a guest over here.
No, he ain't just a guest. Right. It's family.
I just saw him on the highlight here to get an interception.
I'll show you some highlights.
Damn.
Where they handed him the ball, and he dropped it.
That's being real right there. Fox Sports 1 Speak podcast. Keyshawn Johnson was the one who was really just like, come on, man, 7 picks, you got no hands. Of
just
course.
For reference, Jalen has 7 career interceptions.
So, right. And we've, unfortunately, like, we're watching a terrific cornerback in real time, but he does drop a lot of would-be, and he knows it. He's come on this radio station lamenting that and talking about it in weeks that he's missed. But my point is not to, like, diminish or disparage Jalen Johnson. I love, like, you got to have lofty goals. I just thought it fit very well with even the players are out of control a little bit in May. And, I get it. I understand it. There are reasons that we look at the Bears and we say that with the interior of the offensive line, the improvements on the defensive line, And maybe the number one reason why people are so jacked about the Bears is the new head coach, Ben Johnson. And you should be. The Bears got Ben Johnson. Oh, my God. The Bears got Ben Johnson. That still goes through my head. Good for the Bears. It is amazing that they were able to land him. It is amazing that Ben Johnson was so desirous of being with the Chicago Bears. But let's take a deep breath on head coaches and first-year head coaches throughout the NFL, and let's just make it Bears. I went through this today. I went back to as far back as my sports consciousness and back to like I was a little one, but I do remember, and if you're like a crazy sports fan like I am and probably most of the people listening and studs, you know that when you're a little kid, you remember stuff that other people don't. So I do remember 1978 Neil Armstrong, or maybe not 1978 was Neil Armstrong's first year as a Bears head coach. A lot of people think he's the guy that landed on the no, we're talking about Neil Armstrong was a head coach for the Chicago Bears. His first year was 1978. His record was 7-9.
I was there.
That's right. In 1982, Mike Ditka, the great Mike Ditka. We all love Ditka. Ditka Bears. Mike Ditka was 3-6. It's a strike shortened season, but I'll even go further. In his second year, he was 8-8. So not a winning record. Dave Wannstedt in 1993, Wanny came in, he was 7-9 in his first year with the Chicago Bears. 1999, Dick Geron was 6-10 with the Chicago Bears. 2004, even Lovie Smith, whose resume has aged better than anybody's in Bears history, probably. Lovie Smith's first year, 5-11. 2013, Mark Trestman, a little bit of an outlier here. Well, no, there's a real outlier coming up, but Trestman did not have a losing record in his first year. Trestman, believe it or not, was 8-8, but still, no winning coaches so far in their first years with the Bears. John Fox. In the year 2015, Johnny Fox was 6-10. That's not a winning record. That is a losing record.
It's all a problem.
That's right. And now to the outlier, truly an outlier, Matt Nagy in 2018. And I do not take away anything from that. I do not disparage that. That was a hell of a fun season. It was a blast, like the regular season, obviously. 12-4 were the Bears that year, but guess who didn't have another winning record after that? That'd be Matt Eberflus, or excuse me, well, Flus too, but that would be Matt Nagy. Some 500 seasons, and I'll say this, his resume is probably going to age well too. Matt Eberflus, do I have to go through the Flus? The Flus was 3-14 in his first year and then presided over dueling 10-game losing streaks. So there can't, and I get it, there's stuff with the rosters that have been left behind through the years. Same thing for Ben Johnson. He does have what I think is a better roster now, but one cannot assume that a head coach in his first year is going to have a winning record, and there are too many unknowns for the Bears for me to be pressing the over button at this very moment. Too many unknowns, and one of them is definitely Ben Johnson. We don't know what Ben Johnson is like in the last 2 minutes of a game when the pressure is on. Look, Mark Trestman came in here as the smartest guy in the room. He didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know when the right time was to punt. He didn't know what was going on at the ends of games. So just keep that stuff in mind. I think Ben Johnson is going to be really good, but I've been around long enough now to not go overboard, even though I might have gone overboard just a little bit last year. Here's the other thing, too. Like, one area, like, we're all focused on the offense. We should be focused on the offense. It's the Bears' bugaboo forever. Forever it has been the Bears' bugaboo. And you've got Caleb Williams in his second year. There is all the pressure in the world on Caleb Williams to be great this year with what the Bears have given him. Obviously, Colston Loveland. You have given him Luther Burden. You also have the weapons there with Rome Odunze going into his second year. Cole Kmet, the veteran tight end. Hopefully he gets better this year, at least on Caleb Williams' watch. And of course, you have DJ Moore, who's probably still the best receiver on the Bears at this very moment. So it's all there, all that pressure, all the offense is worth talking about it. What I was thinking about today, though, was the defense, and specifically explosive runs by opposing running backs, or just devastating moments by running backs that completely altered the course of games this year. It happened a lot, and I will go into it saying, I will say it, yeah, the Bears brought in enforcements. Grady Jarrett, okay? Shamar Turner is here, rookie, so you don't know. That's an unknown still. Dio Dangbo, that's an unknown as well. Like, he, you know, we know that he has affected the quarterback, but he has not knocked down the quarterback enough, and I'm not sure how good he is against the run, but we will find out in this season, at least in a Bears uniform. And Jarrett should be good. I mean, unless there is the, you know, diminishing skills with the fact that he's 32, but I think he's going to be good. So I say all this knowing that, plus that Andrew Billings was out for a significant portion of last year. But man, I was going through this stuff. I went through every game, and the rushing yards against the Bears this year, they gave up 136 rushing yards per game. That is 28th in the league. And here are some of the runs, and maybe I even need some blanks to be filled in for me about some of the explosive runs that were jarring to the Bears. The Colts, against the Colts, Jonathan Taylor, 29 yards. That was also the game that a 29-yard run in that game. That was also the game in which I believe Caleb Williams threw the ball like 52, 53 times for like 360 yards, something crazy like that. You guys remember Chuba Hubbard with the Carolina Panthers in this 38-yard run? The Washington... I'm forgetting the Commanders. The Washington Commanders, Brian Robinson.
Dumb name anyway, it's fine.
It really is. Sometimes you gotta
Washington
think.
Football team was, I mean, so much better.
It's been three different names in the last 3 years. I feel like I'm entitled to have a brain
fart. They had
fart.
all this time to come up with a really cool name, and they come up with Commanders.
We shall command thee. I mean, I get it. It's like they're in D.C., so that.
There's a lot of cool
names
out
there, though. Congressmen, Commanders, but you know what's hilarious about that, actually? I was at the Combine this year in Indianapolis, the NFL Scouting Combine. I'm glad that my partner, Chris Emma, was there with me. We for some reason, I don't remember why, but we listened to the GM of the Washington Commanders, and their whole thing in their organization is they call each other good commanders. He's a good commander. You're a good commander. Hey, commander, how are you? You're a good commander.
That's so lame.
It's Emma and I looking at each other like, what's going on here?
What a bunch of dorks.
You're a good commander. By the way, Chris Emma will be in studio with us at about 6:45. So I will tell him that he's a good commander. Yeah, so every once in a while I would see Chris and say, you're a good commander. You're a good commander. Like, all right, we better get out of here, man. We might get hurt. We're hanging out in the Commanders huddle right now. People are eyeing us. They're looking at us funny. Yeah, it's like, hey, man, you guys got the best of the Bears last year. You sent the Bears spinning last year. But, okay, here's one. Here's one. Arizona, Amari DiMarcado, the 53-yard run at the end of the first half. And at those points, you're like, oh, God, the defense might suck this year to go along with everything else the Bears are dealing with. The Minnesota game, Aaron Jones, first Minnesota game, Aaron Jones, a 41-yard run in that game. The Seattle game, Kenny McIntosh, a 25-yard run in that game. The Green Bay game, check these names out. Emmanuel Lewis had a 21-yard run. Chris Brooks had a 23-yard run in that game. Couple more. I don't even know if I'm going in the right order here anymore. Jahmyr Gibbs. God, the Detroit game. And I mean, that was a disaster. The disastrous Thanksgiving Day game. Jahmyr Gibbs had a 28-yard run. It was just like Montgomery Gibbs. 10 yards here, 15 yards there, 28 yards there. And then the last one, and like I said, maybe you can fill in the blanks with some more of these, but in the San Francisco game, Isaac Garendo also had a 31-yard run. That was not part of the Bears' defense in the first half of the season. That was not part of what the Bears did in even years past, man. You got, like, once you stop stopping the run, then it's a real problem. You know what I'm saying? Because I get it. Like, everybody wants to throw the ball. So just make, at the minimum, in this version of the NFL, you have got to start stop the run, and the Bears stopped doing it. So until I see Grady Jarrett and Shamar Turner and Jervon Dexter and Andrew Billings and Montez Sweat show me they can stop the run and the explosive runs, then I'm going to keep staring at that. I'm still going to be concerned about that until it is better, because you can't just let that slide. So that's a big part of it.
I want to also say, just keep in mind how things can change so fast in 1 year. And just real quick, because I know we got a break here. But yeah.
Oh, do we?
The year before 2023, the Bears' run defense was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
So things can change really fast in 1 year.
It could change in a blink of an eye, as the Chicago Bulls once told us post-Jordan. So, and then, you know, really quickly, and then we will break, and we'll talk Cubs with Evan Altman here in just moments. The unknowns on the offensive line. Like, Ozzie Trapillo, probably going to be good. He's a second-round pick. All signs point to, yeah, he could be good, but can he be good right away? Is Braxton Jones going to be healthy? Is Karan Amagaji worth anything? Can Darnell Wright be the left tackle? Thank God for those guys on the interior. There's just things that have to be worked out with the Bears. Like, I like their roster. Their roster is better, but we kind of got to see it, and we got to allow for a little bit of development. I know you don't have time. I understand. But my rhymes are on time, Bears fans. I don't know what that means, but that is the truth. We do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back to Bears, I promise you. When we come back, let's talk to Evan Altman. He is the editor-in-chief and co-founder of CubsInsider.com. Cubs have lost two straight games. We'll talk about the last two games and today's 3-1 loss to the Giants. We'll figure out who's going to be pitching over the next few days. Cubs will be at the Mets starting on Friday. We'll get into all of it with Evan. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
And now the 0-2 on the way to Hap. Swing and a miss. Strike three in the ball game is over. In 11 innings, San Francisco beats the Cubs by a score of 14-5. Here's the 1-2 pitch on the way. Nico bounces one toward third, charging Chapman, gloves it, and throws to first in time. And the Giants have taken 2 out of 3. They beat the Cubs today by a score of 3-1.
Mark Grody with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I get to be with you until 9 o'clock. Pat Hughes with the call of the Cubs 3-1 loss to the Giants. The Cubs now 22-16. They are off tomorrow and then at the Mets on Friday. Jameson Taillon is scheduled to pitch, TBD on Saturday. Matt Boyd, it looks like, on Sunday. And yeah, it is. It is a mini two-game losing streak for the Cubs. And let's keep the Cubs talk cooking, as I'm happy to bring in now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. It is Evan Altman, the editor-in-chief and co-founder of CubsInsider.com. Evan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. This is a little bit weird, though. I'm used to the old Saturday suckage days with you, Grody. This is an odd time for me. I have some cognitive dissonance.
I understand. I just want you to know I'm way better during the evenings. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, we just suck on
low
Saturdays.
Bar to clear.
It right? is a low bar to clear, yes.
For both of us. So.
Yeah, bring your best stuff, man. We can't be lax in here because this is like a real time. This is a weekday. So we will right. we'll act accordingly. What do you think of today's game? The Ben Brown performance, 5 innings, 3 runs, 6 hits, did strike out 9. What do you think about today's game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess speaking of low bars to clear, after what they finished with on Tuesday night, like anything's going to be better. Ugh, but the one run, it was just it looked kind of sloppy, lackadaisical all the way around. Like Brown, obviously, like you said, the 9 strikeouts, but took him over 100 pitches to get 5 innings. A lot of soft contact, but he just had so much trouble. I know this sounds odd with 9 strikeouts, but a bunch of those Giants hits came in 2-strike counts, or a lot of like 1-1 or 1-2, 2-2 counts. Yeah. He just wasn't finishing. Like, he could have easily had double-digit strikeouts well into there. So I still, you know, I continue to harp on it. It looks like he's tweaked the changeup. I want to see him throw it more. I think it was only maybe 2 or 3 times again today. That third pitch, I think, could really elevate him. So it was really good. He did enough to keep the Cubs in the game, but you feel like there's kind of more in the tank that he's not near his ceiling yet.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's good that he's had 2, I guess, decent outings, like back-to-back decent outings after a really bad outing in the previous one to that. And yeah, to your point, I mean, he had 28 pitches in the first inning, ends up throwing 103 pitches really out of necessity because of what you referenced, the mess that was last night. And Ben Brown was just, you know, the dreaded leadoff walks, man. He was burned by leadoff walks on the first and third, which both eventually would come around to score. So those are things that he's got to work on. But we do have to go back to yesterday. And what are your thoughts on Ryan Pressly? Are the Cubs in trouble in terms of their closer right now?
You know, I look at there's kind of a couple sides to the coin. And the one is that he had looked significantly better, after kind of he was a little shaky, and then he had the little knee issue, had the knee drained, looked pretty good for a while. The part that bothers me is not, and again, you can kind of look at, obviously, what would bother anyone is the fact that he didn't record any outs and gave up a ton of runs. But the problem to me is you've got a closer who had in that time, I think he threw 28 pitches as well. It was at least in the mid-20s, no whiffs. Like, the hits are one thing, you know, guys can get lucky, but as a closer, you cannot have a closer who can't miss bats. and even when he was doing well and not giving up those runs, it was a while. It took him multiple outings to get more strikeouts than walks. And again, that is a lethal combination in the wrong way for any closer, or any late game reliever at all. So he has got to do something better with that. That's the part that I'm concerned with, is the complete inability to miss bats.
Yeah, that's a problem. So do you think that is Porter Hodge ready for that role?
I thought he was ready for it before they traded for Pressly.
Okay.
He still looks the part. If you look at I think he was probably third in win probability, actually second on the team, I think, win probability added, when you look at the huge swing, you know, the Tucker single to tie the game, I think flipped it by like 40% in the Cubs' favor, and then Hodge going scoreless got him about 30%. I mean, he's shown, you know, limited action last year, but he looks like he's certainly ready for it and can handle that if they need to. But it's so tough when you've traded for a guy, kind of gave him some assurances, you know, reinforced his no trade clause. That's tough this early in the season to take that away from him. But there again, that's what Craig Counsell is making a whole bunch of money to make the decisions on, and that's why I'm talking to you on the phone.
Damn right about that, about Craig Counsell, man. I mean, yeah, he's got to get it right eventually here. And, you know, he has gotten it right a lot this year. I don't want to disparage him necessarily at this point. Talking to Evan Altman, CubsInsider.com. All right, let's get to the farm because that's where there's a lot of talk right now. Do you think Cade Horton is ready to come up and be effective at the major league level?
Absolutely. I mean, I thought he was ready. I thought he should have come up last year before he got hurt, obviously, and saw him pitch his first start of the season for the Iowa Cubs. We were there for that. And first few outings he had were in really sloppy weather, so a lot of the walks, I think, were a function of that, you know, trying to pitch through the rain and the cold. But if you look at it, and I saw, I think it was Greg Zumach, who was with Northside Bound previously, made a really good point, like, hey, this is a guy who pitched in the largest stage in college baseball in the College World Series. He went to Oklahoma to be a quarterback, right? This is somebody who relishes the big stage, who has performed well on it in the past. So I don't think that's an issue at all. It's just more a matter of, is he stretched out enough to give them the innings that they need? Because he's been really limited in that regard. They've capped him at 80 pretty much. They don't want him starting new innings if he's over 70. But there again, we're looking at Brown going five. Most of the starters these days don't go deep. So if you look at it, no matter how you slice it, I think there's no reason to keep him down there wasting any bullets down in AAA when you could have him up in Chicago and see what you got.
Yeah, and there's a lot of signs that point to him potentially being the guy Saturday, and if not Saturday, then maybe against Miami or against the White Sox. So it's going to happen, barring any kind of injury or setbacks in that regard. It's really just a matter of time. The other guy that I just can't figure out at this point is, and there should still be high hopes for Jordan Wicks, and I know he pitched well in his most recent start, but he's a former first-round pick, and when last we saw him pitching at the major league level, maybe not a lot of people remember this because it was outshined in the 13-11 crazy win against Arizona, but when Wicks came into that game against Arizona, three straight solid singles ahead of Porter Hodge giving up the grand slam to Eugenio Suarez. What have you seen or heard about what is going on with Jordan Wicks?
Yeah, that's a really tough one because he and Luke Little's another one who's kind of had a little bit of those the struggles with command and really dialing it in. But you know, when we first saw Wicks come up, he was kind of a revelation. At first, you know, his debut start looked great. The changeup was really working, and it's like, okay, you know, this is a guy that they thought they were getting, you know, quick mover through the system. But I don't know if it's a confidence issue. It does feel a little bit with some of these guys that they're almost trying so hard they kind of get stuck in their own head a little bit, and they're forcing things rather than just letting it work and do what makes them good. When I've watched Wicks, he feels, and again, it's just kind of theoretical, my amateur eye, but he looks a little tight. He looks as if he's not kind of in that nice flow state and going out there and having fun, at least at the major league level. And that could change on a dime. Who knows? But right now, he's definitely at least second, if not third, behind Horton and whomever else they might want to look at for that start.
Yeah, and I got to admit, like at the beginning of the season when they sent him down before the season started, I was like, what is going on with this guy? But the Cubs are obviously trying to figure it out with him. The other guy I got to get an update on, and you're the perfect person to ask because you were writing about him recently on CubsInsider.com, is Matt Shaw. What's going on with Shaw?
Yeah, so, I mean, he's making some tweaks. You know, it's similar, and Jed Hoyer kind of referenced this when he was optioned down, and just about some of the other guys who, you know, Anthony Rizzo had to go down and kind of correct some things after his debut. And that was more with the Padres. But, I mean, even when the Cubs picked him up, you know, they kind of let Rizzo get back a little bit of that mojo in AAA. Kyle Schwarber had to go down there and work. Ian Happ is another one who I think is probably most similar because he was making some poor decisions at the plate, had some holes in his swing. And we saw him kind of go down to AAA a few years back and almost intentionally start hitting the ball on the ground more. That's something that we're seeing with Shaw. He's been more aggressive early in the count. He took way too many first pitch strikes when he was up in the majors, fell behind in counts, and then was kind of guessing and getting himself out of what made him good. And now what we're seeing is I think he's widened his stance just a little bit. He sped up too much kind of proactively to handle MLB velocity, and that kind of ended up screwing up his timing. So we're seeing a guy who's getting back to it, and I think he's not long for AAA. If not for his own merits and what he's doing individually, like the Cubs still are just it's a rotating door there at third base, and they haven't found another answer. So I think he's probably the best option still, at least as far as upside.
Yeah, we'll say, John, because we're always – like I hold my breath when I see the ball hit to third, but John Birdie – man the position well today, especially in the sixth inning on a 5-2-3 double play started by John Birdie. So it was good to see that. So do you think that, and you're right, I mean, that makes sense, that Matt Shaw is going to get another bite at the apple soon. Do you think that if Matt Shaw comes up and he's, you know, decent, like he's representative, he's playing good defense, he's hitting the ball well, do you then think the Cubs will still try to upgrade at the third base position?
I don't think so, if only for the sake that you look around the league, and in terms of guys who are going to be available, there are like third base is kind of a black hole in terms of any kind of a significant upgrade. Like there's other guys that could be out there that sort of would fit into this rotation they've got. I know a lot of people was, oh, what about Nolan Arenado? But I can promise you that it would take a whole lot to get him away from a division rival. But I don't think they want to pay a 34-year-old $30 million a year for the next couple of seasons that he's under contract. So like he would be the one, but he's, you know, again, he's also not performing entirely all that well after kind of a hot start. So I think it's got to be Shaw or bust, to be honest, because it's just, there's not enough out there that gives him a market improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. So really, man, they are really at this point banking on him to be improved once he comes back up here. Last thing for you, Evan, and that is, About the starters and Jameson Taillon, who's been really good over his last two starts, and I've learned not to count on him to like be at that level. But is there anything that he's doing this year, or even in his last two starts, that you think could be sustainable, where we see that version of Jameson Taillon consistently this year?
Yeah, you know, I think he spent a lot of work with Tread Athletics in the off season, kind of refining a little bit with his breaking ball and everything. But one of the things that we're seeing with him, similar to what we've seen with Colin Ray so far, is an increased usage of the four-seam fastball. Despite, you know, neither of them throws exceptionally hard; they're a little bit below league average. But if you look at Taillon in the past, his four-seam was a little bit under 30%. It was still his most used pitch. But if you look at him this year, he's up to 43%. I mean, that's a really big, almost a 50% increase in fastball usage. He's getting a little more ride on that. And I think that helps set up. Like right now, his fastball value is in the 78th percentile in MLB. And what we're seeing as well is that even though he doesn't throw the off-speed a lot, like the changeup is a really seldom used pitch for him, but it sets up really nicely off of that fastball with the high ride, so it gives him the ability to kind of use the breaking pitch as well, too. But I think it's kind of odd that you would see a bunch of guys in this rotation who all throw kind of low 90s, increasing fastball usage. That runs contrary to what we see in most places around the league, but the Cubs are doing it to really great effect so far.
Great stuff, Evan. You passed the weekday test. I think we're going to be able to do it again. I mean, you're going to probably get sent down for a couple more Saturdays here and there, but that was great stuff, my friend.
I'll do what I can. I got to work my way back, just like Matt Shaw.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Yep, that is Evan Altman, editor-in-chief, co-founder of CubsInsider.com. I am Mark Grody. When we return, Chris Emma will walk down the hallway for his hot take of the day. Now, I am told, I don't know specifically what it is, but he said succession plan for the Chicago Cubs, that he is confused about that. And we'll find out exactly what he is talking about coming up next here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Some people like Chris Emma.
Score evenings, weeknights 6 till 9.
We're back on The Score, and now in studio with us, he has made his way from the WBBM Update Studio to the almighty Score Studios. He is Chris Emma. What's going on, Emma?
Bears. How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, dude. You're all hot and bothered by the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs, 22-16. They've lost two in a row.
Oh, no.
And
3 out of 4.
They've lost 3 out of 4.
Sound the alarm bells.
You're so cynical, man. No, I can tell you've been doing updates, because if you've looked at that, the Cubs have lost 3 out of 4. They've lost two in a row. We find different ways to say the same things.
Good afternoon.
That is true. So what are you concerned about in the year 2025, Chris, where everything has been great, don't you know?
Yeah, let me preface this by saying we're exaggerating a bit on the micro about losing two in a row, losing a series to the Giants, losing three out of four here to start this week. My focus is on the big picture, and the big picture being this 2025 season in which you have a superstar player in Kyle Tucker for a rental, essentially, and you've got a team that's really playing for this year, but also the big picture, looking ahead to the future. And there's a delicate balance that's going to have to be struck in the next couple months. And we're sitting here May 7th, you're 2+ months away from the trade deadline, so you're really looking ahead with this take. But on Sunday, the Iowa Cubs had a lineup that included six guys in the top 100 of MLB pipeline prospects. Mm. Six. That included Cade Horton on the mound for the Iowa Cubs on Sunday. The likes of Matt Shaw in there, James Triantos, Owen Casey. It's a loaded lineup, and that's awesome to see. But I want to know what the plan is here as you look ahead. I'm starting to look ahead to the trade deadline now and thinking about this from the big picture. It's nice to sit on this lump of prospects and say, man, the future's bright. But you're looking at a team that's granted very good, but a team that has blocking at the major league level. You got guys who are set on long-term deals and guys who you know are going to be part of your core moving forward. Dansby Swanson, obviously, several more years left on that deal. Core players like Happ, Horner, et cetera, et cetera. Michael Bush. What are the plan for some of these prospects? I hope Jed Hoyer is looking ahead to the deadline and starting to make the plans of who are we going to be moving? Who are the guys that are expendable as we look to the long-term and our trade assets as you start thinking about how can we acquire that star closer to really shore up the back end of the bullpen, or who maybe it's Sandy Alcantara, whoever your frontline starter is. What's your trade package going to look like? You have to be preparing that idea in mind. Now here's the larger point of this here, Grody, is that a lot of people see just the NL Central standings. The Cubs are up three games on the Brewers, Cardinals as well. It looks great, and the Cubs should win the NL Central. Like, if they don't win the Central, it's going to be a huge disappointment. But they shouldn't be comparing themselves to the Brewers right now, or the Cardinals, or anybody else. Mm. They should be comparing themselves to the Mets, to the top of the NL East, and to the Dodgers, the top of the NL West. Not to mention how tight that division is going to be the whole way. Giants, Padres, D-backs all in there. The Cubs want that first-round bye. They want to have that early opportunity in the playoffs where you're resting in the wild card weekend instead of fighting through what's going to be a really deep NL bracket. What's going to be, you know, the bottom end of that wild card is going to be probably a team from the NL West or the NL East that's really good. And maybe it's the Braves, the Giants, who we just saw take two out of three here. You know it's going to be a battle to get to that point. I hope they are fighting with the urgency necessary, knowing that this window is not going to be open for long, even with this lump of prospects. Jed Hoyer's in the last year of his deal. Kyle Tucker, you don't know if you're going to be able to sign him back or not. That's for this offseason. This season's precious right now. You've got a really good ball club playing a lot of fun ball, and you've got this lump of prospects of guys that are ready to graduate onto the major league level and give yourself hope for the present and the future. I'm really intrigued to see what this plan is and how it falls into place.
Was Kevin Alcantara, speaking of Alcantaras, was he in that Cubs
lineup? He was part of that as well.
That you were just talking about. Okay, so other than, because we know Matt Shaw is going to get another bite at the apple at the big league level, and there's a spot waiting for him at third base.
That's the only spot in this lineup where you say, man, they really got to fill that as third base, and ideally he gets back here sooner rather than later and makes that impact.
Yeah, and you know, Cade Horton is all signs point heavily towards Cade Horton being here. So I guess my follow-up question to that is, out of those guys that you just kind of ran through and mentioned, which one of those guys are guys that you think are expendable and should be potentially part of a sustained success core for the Cubs?
You know, one guy I got my eye on, and I don't know if I have an answer right now, Grody, is Moises Ballesteros. Mm-hmm. That dude is a masher.
He's a hitter.
That guy, I actually got to go to an Iowa Cubs game a couple weeks ago, and like the one at bat I saw of his, like the ball just explodes off the bat. His numbers are crazy down in AAA Iowa, and like he's lighting up pitchers there. But he doesn't have a position right now. He's a catcher, but he's probably not a catcher at the big league level. Sounds familiar, right? Takes you back to Kyle Schwarber about a decade ago. And where is he going to play? How is he going to fit? Like, you got a Kyle Schwarber comp right now and Moises Ballesteros.
Oh, my God.
Is here DH in the long term? Say he is occupying that spot simply because he's the best fit in that DH role. And now, the thing to consider, too, obviously, there's going to be injuries this season. There's going to be guys who go down. You're going to have to call. Maybe it's an outfielder like an Owen Casey. Maybe it is a DH like Ballesteros or Triantos gets a call to middle infield spot. Like, some of these decisions are going to be made for you. And just hope these guys are ready to step in and accelerate their development process. But It's a curious proposition. I'm really fascinated to know, how does Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins compare Owen Casey to a Kevin Alcantara, for example? Like, who do they covet more, and who do they want to get rid of more, so to speak? Like, there's a lot of these really delicate decisions where maybe all things are equal and you have a preference on who you want to trade, who you want to develop with. And obviously, you're going to have your hand forced, too. There's going to be a team, if you're looking for that closer, whoever, your frontline starter, that says, I prefer Alcantara over Casey, or vice versa. Like, some of these decisions are just going to be made for you, but it's a really fascinating point in time. This team is really darn good. They should be one of the two best teams in the National League, and moving on to that situation where you're not fighting for the wild card, that you get to rest and you come out later on at this point. Like, I like to think they can be the best team in the National League here, and we'll see how this plays out, but I think they're in a really good position here. They got to take advantage of it now.
Yeah, I mean, right now, too, because, you know, Milwaukee is 500, St. Louis is 500, Cincinnati a game under 500, and Pittsburgh sucks at 12 and 26. Emma, I wish we had more time, but maybe that was perfect. Thanks for jumping in here, man.
Bears.
Absolutely. That's Chris Emma. You should follow him. All of his writings at CEmma670 is the place to follow him on Twitter. He writes for 670thescore.com. He talks about the Bears, and he does updates on WBBM. When we return, we are going to talk more NFL, NFC North, and Bears with Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports. That is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Bears.